Actually, I was just in passing, I was going to say a little bit about what's been happening on the stand for these last 3 days. It's been pretty exciting, really. At this end, we've had these wise old owls, you know, who've got heaps of wisdom to offer about building new learning environments, not just schools of the future. You know, Chris has been probably the most radical classroom building program in the world, for example. So a lot of wisdom about what works and what doesn't work, and then people standing up and chatting for 15 minutes or so every 45 minutes. But at the other end, we've had children every day who've been surveyed. I'm sure some of you have been surveyed already by them, been grilling you about your vision of future schooling. And they've been asking really tough questions. On the first day, they were using little handheld devices, little phones and PDAs. They were asking teachers about, did they have low energy light bulbs in their house? Did they turn the television set off properly every night? And yes, they all did. And then they turned to the classroom and said, so do you have low energy light bulbs in your classroom? No, they didn't. You know, there's a huge gap between the greenness of teachers at home and at school. And kids were rightly damning about this. They've been working on these surveys for most of last term with their sponsors. And then yesterday there was a big open-ended questions about, gosh, you know, what was your vision for the school of the future like? People have been reflecting on how mature yesterday's conversations were. They're sitting down chatting to kids about what they really wanted from their future school. And then today they've been really, this is a school who actively use YouTube, who capture interviews with their head teacher, highlights of the school day, sporting successes, put it all together weekly into a broadcast, park it on YouTube, and then they all sit down as a school and watch it. But it's podcast, it's on YouTube, their parents can watch it. And they're busy asking everybody, so do you think we should be allowed access to YouTube in school and Microsoft Messenger, and we should have MySpace? And by the way, we're using it in school, so we really... And they've put in a few little sneak questions of a few websites that don't really exist, and they're saying, you know, do you often go to such and such? And people are saying, oh yes, I go there all the time. It doesn't exist, you know. So these are great and tough questions. And it's been a real buzz on the stand, really, all throughout BET, of this sort of nice vision of what do we think learning is going to look like in the future? And by the way, is there enough wisdom lying around to help us build it? Which is quite coupled with the fact that just at the moment in BET, we're getting some, it's the beginning of a really extraordinary time in terms of hardware. I don't know how many of you saw this, but I'll pass it around. This doesn't exist yet. It's a future product that Intel have developed. It's quite nice. The kids have been adoring it. It just gives you that sense that we're just at the beginning of a deluge of exciting new products. You heard the announcement about the Apple iPhone early in the week, for sure. So suddenly, you know, we're in this really nice position of, you know, we have got the most awesome technology. The software actually works. You know, the equipment, you know, you can drop it. I can throw my phone at you, and it really doesn't matter if you drop it because it's going to work. So we're in a just extraordinarily fortunate position. But the question for us is, what do we want to do with it? And just this year in BET, more than any other, there's a real buzz as suddenly everybody's walking down the corridors, not talking about bits and bytes and RAMs and ROMs and kit, but talking about cool stuff that we might do with learning. And I think that's absolutely fab. So I really wanted to reflect on that a little bit in our few minutes together. You know, this is my 21st BET, I think. Too old to count now, you know. When we started, it's quite interesting, when we started this was full of little sort of hobbyist people. Some of you were those, you know, with a wallpaper table and your mum's curtains and a pair of spotlights, you know, selling a bit of software that you tried to write. We had a huge amount of freedom at that point to innovate with technology. And that innovation, I think, was all to do with, I wonder if we can use it to enhance learning. Well, you know, where we are now, of course, you can have anything you like. You can literally have anything you like. Anything you like. And the question really is much more simply, what would you like to do? Because that's a much tougher question. You know, if you can have, you know, I've been talking to ministers all week, and some of them have got graduate rates of 20%. I'm saying, well, you could have 66%. We know how to do it. We've got examples out there. Some of them have got exclusion rates of 40%. We know how it can be zero. Good examples out there. Some of them want children to be doubling and trebling their performance within a decade. We know how to do it. There's lots of examples out there. So the question suddenly is, you know, how good do we want all this to be? And it's actually, it's a really nice, it's a nice problem to be facing. Because what we used to do historically was this, you know, we used to say, find me good practice, let's see if I can have a go, and can we make it a smidge better would be nice. I mean, sort of criterion referencing to make sure that our children were doing as well as they were doing 10 years before. And people saying, why do they keep changing everything? I've never known anybody come back from the dentist and say, why can't it be like it was when I was a kid? I mean, just in passing, you know. But there was a sense that education, you know, don't go too fast, don't run too fast. You know. The message from these kids on the other end of the stand is, please, 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 would you mind getting your shoes on and running? You know, it's time to really move. And of course, you know, how we run is this way. You know, now, pick your targets, you know, as a school, as a local authority, as a nation, as a family, you know, how good do you want to be? Now let's design our way to it, and having designed our way to it, let's see if we can't revisit those targets and see if we were ambitious enough. Flip, we weren't. Okay, let's really go for it. So it's a pretty exciting world that we're in, and one I rather enjoy. It's worth maybe... No, I don't think I'll go there. It's worth having a look at some of the things that people are trying around the world in way of being brave with education. Because what's exciting about BET, you'll have seen it on the corridors, you'll have seen it in the coffee bars, in Pret-a-Manger, in the toilets, you know. People are here from all over the world to talk about new learning. And it's quite daunting to see just how many cool things people are doing in terms of new learning all around the world. I mean, pretty exciting, to be honest. You know, here's... where should we start? Let's start with... since Chris is there, you know, let's start with some of those fabulous classrooms of the future that have been designed right here in the UK. And it's spectacular. How many of them, Chris? 25. You know, it's just 25 absolutely out-of-the-box, staggering examples of how good learning might be. And in every case, and I'll show you a little clip at the end, in every case, the impact of children going into these new environments has been to just open their eyes a little to think about new ways of learning. Not hugely ambitious builds in terms of money, hugely ambitious in terms of vision, for sure. And there's some stuff about scale. Jonathan's been one of the wise old owls sitting here today. And here's Jonathan's school. It opened with two people in it. He's chatting, but I think the role's right up to five now. And he's never going to have 10. And it works really well because there are other schools around the world of a similar scale, aren't there? You know, here's a school in the Cayman Islands that's been working, fabulous work in the Caribbean. A proper ambition. The whole Cayman Islands as a nation is rebranding itself as a campus. You know, as you land at the airport, it's like, welcome to your own campus. You're there as a tourist to learn to dive. You're there as a, you know, you're working in the finance industry. Everybody's on campus. It's a, you know, a country becoming a campus. It's the most extraordinary concept. And here's one of the little tiny schools there. Because these schools are all viable because you can join up and swap and exchange ideas with each other. And when I say tiny school, I mean that's the school. There's the neighbours, you know. So it really is properly tiny. Here's this is rather interesting. This is the just before it opened, the Australian School of Maths and Science in Adelaide. And there's some really There's stands here from Australia. There's some really exciting stuff happening in Tasmania and Victoria, right across Australia. Kind of interesting to think why. But this school, look, jeeps, this is the staff room. and there's a whole lot of schools around being built with no staff rooms at all. And this staff room's only got three walls, and it's just a storage cupboard. It's a place you leave your marking. How could that be possible? How could you have a school without the staff room? Because everybody, as they walk through the door, is a learner. You know, everybody's exploring, how might we do this better? I mean, you don't, in your house, you probably don't have a parent's room. You just go, maybe you wish you did, you know. but so staff rooms even are disappearing. This is a world of learning. Everybody's a learner. And in the schools, people are moving. Now, that's pretty brave. But I tell you, not nearly as brave as this school is on the grounds of Flinders University. And from 11 onwards, children have the opportunity to sit in on undergraduate classes. Now, remember yourself at 13, you know, you could have sat in on an undergraduate class. The thing that you were passionate about, the thing that you really, really cared about, you could have done that at 13. You know, and you remember being an undergraduate first year? snogging and boozing mostly, so their study wasn't so taxing. So why shouldn't kids, you know, as early as they like, get stuck into some of this learning? And of course what you're seeing around the world is that question being posed in all sorts of interesting ways. Here's for example, this is pretty fab. This is in Singapore. And by the way, Canberra Primary School in Singapore, I've been working with, is a primary school of 3,500 children. Half of them come in the morning, have lunch, the other half have lunch and stay for the afternoon. The teachers are there for the whole day. You know, how are they not exhausted? Well, because they're spending a lot less time doing the administrative chores that have burdened us so much. In Hong Kong, you know, if I'm a kid and I'm carrying a concessionary, I'm carrying my concessionary octopus card, as I walk under the school notices that I'm there. So all that time that schools spend reconciling who's in the register with, who's in the school with, who thinks they're in the school, which you know is a big burden every morning, it's resolved, you know. As you walk onto the premises, the school notices, the least you might expect. I mean, if Tesco's can do it with a bottle of brandy, surely we can do it with are our kids worth more than a bottle of brandy? I think so. Nice touch, by the way, in Hong Kong, is that could you have a rapid transit card in the morning when the trains are really busy? If you get off as a kid with your rapid transit card and walk the slightly long way round and come back halfway there, there's a touch point. You touch your card on it, they credit you with a dollar. So if you walk instead of catching the train, not only do you get fitter, but they pay you to do it because it reduces the... Just, you see how ingenious people are being with technology that lets us do it. This is a bunch of kids who are out in with a wireless camera and laptop. They're taking pictures of plants. They're beaming the plants back to their science class, but they're also, of course, beaming back to their art class, because lots of people are discovering there ain't a lot of difference between science and performance and drama and creativity. They're all in the same sort. 250th anniversary of William Blake this year. And, you know, he didn't think they were two separate things. And look what happens when you start taking them apart and imagining them. Here's, crumbs, let me find, well, let's just stay with Singapore briefly before I disappear. So here's what happens also in Singapore. How do the teachers not get exhausted? Real easy. Small child, big child. Big child, small child. School network video. This is the primary school gym, by the way. Eat your heart out. About 3,500 kids, you can afford it. But look, no staff. You know, the staff aren't spending their time supervising children. The children download a little clip from the video, a little video clip from the network that says, this is how you behave safely in the gym. And this child has a set of questions that make sure they understand. This one understands. This one has a set of questions that make sure this one understands. When they're both up to speed with what they're doing, then they go into the gym and look, safety, relatively few fatalities, and it's working. Absolutely fab. Talking of relatively few fatalities, here's Thailand, TK Park in Thailand. It's a family learning space on top of it's on the sixth floor of a shopping mall. This is just a tiny part of it, you know. By the way, if you want some of these images, there are two ways, feel free to take the picture, of course, but there are two better ways of getting them. If you go and be interviewed by the children over there, they'll give you a set of postcards with most of these images on them for free. And if you're really too lazy to talk to the children, or it's a Friday and you don't want to, hebble.net/postcards, you'll find them all on the website as well. So. But go and talk to the kids, nice. This is a family learning space, not a school. It's built for families to learn in, and it's full of activity. It's predicated on the thought you might go there to do things and make things and create things and share things. It's absolutely fab. And look, these are crash mats, so it's safer than it really looks. We could talk about this all day. These are short talks. I'm just going to give you two more images to think about. And these are, you know, this doesn't all have to be about new spend. This is Western Heights in Victoria. And Western Heights, they'd looked around the world and they'd said, but we understand that there's a new model of learning out there. We understand that children are spending less time moving from lesson to lesson, and they're spending more time with their heads down and focusing. You know, the average timetable unit in secondary schools worldwide is certainly 100 minutes and growing rapidly. And most I've found is a timetable block of a month. You do the same thing for a month and then do something else. You know? So the time period's going up, and if you haven't surveyed your own schools to see how much time you waste ringing the bell and putting your bags away and moving and coming back, and you know, basically if you're on 45-minute lesson periods, you're burning up Friday every week, just throwing Friday away. So places that have really got their heads around children concentrating, and around mixed age teaching sometimes, and around project-based work sometimes, need the agility of big open spaces to do it in. But this is a traditional school, and they've just knocked out most of the stuff that wasn't holding the roof up, hopefully. and you can see what they've left is an open plan space in the traditional building. But look at the data, look at the figures from that school, because Australians are very wise about capturing data. And here's some of the data from that. Can you see that? Can you see those well enough from there? Is that okay? Cool. I mean, you don't need me to point out the student morale is up from 17% to 80%. I mean, these are massive gains, not just as a result of knocking the walls out, but of knocking down all the boxes and all the limits in terms of how they were teaching and how they were learning. Have a look at teacher empathy, 18% up to 77%. Have a look at student distress, you know, which is 24%. You know, that it's not got worse, it's got better. You understand what I'm saying. And have a look at maybe, perhaps really spectacular, connectedness to peers from 20% up to 85%. You know, in the 21st century, we want children that can collaborate, communicate, be team members. You know, the two things that are most likely, I don't know how many of you are chief executives, the two things most likely to get you sacked as a chief executive are bad teamwork and inability to communicate. Now ask yourself, where are those in the curriculum? You know, so what we're rediscovering with these new models of learning, you know, are new models of working together that are hugely, hugely powerful. Now all I'm saying to you is, you know, sometimes when I'm talking about new schools to head teachers, to teachers, they get all excited and then they say, little sort of question, they say, okay, just, you know, we don't want to do this too fast, so there's the diagram of the new school, just show me where my existing timetable would fit in that new school. And I'll say with absolute lack of equivocation, if your existing timetable fit in the new school, nobody should have given you the money to build a new school. This is a fabulous chance to think again about teaching and learning. And I'll tell you what, when we go back in history, 1950 to 2000, that'll be the moment of aberration, you know, because there's a lot of talk at the moment about Web 2.0 and how exciting social networking is. For me, you know, Education 2.0 just turns out to be familiar old learning 1.0. You know, what we've got away from doing, building those ghastly factory delivery models where the curriculum was delivered, wisdom was received, everybody was processed, the children were uniform and indeed wore uniforms and were passed out of the door. We've moved to a point where we can have absolutely fabulous, collaborative, collegiate, engaging, delightful, seductive learning. And all around the world, people are building it. The only question for us is whether we want to be on the vanguard of all that or track it along in the wake of the pioneers. I don't care. I'm just excited by how fast it's all going. We ought to stop there because it's long enough. If you want all these talks, they're all being podcast. If you want the kids' results and their surveys, there's a daily press release, and it's all going to be on the website. You can get to it all from the BET website. Go and talk to the kids if you want the postcards. Postcards are free, but you have to think real hard about their tough questions. Thank you very much.